Use this thing so it wouldn't flop all over the place.
Okay. I'll call the meeting to order for the City Council of August the 8th. And if we could have a moment of silence, please. Stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please. Roll call.
Here.
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 I'll entertain a motion.
So move.
Second.
Motion has been made and seconded. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say nay. Motion is carried 6-0. Audience participation. Next item on the agenda. And we've got Dana Hanks. Proclamation. Good. Well, look here, Dana. This is your big opportunity. Okay, I'm going to read this to you.
Okay. All right. Okay. Sounds good. You need to have both hands.
And both hands. This is a proclamation, whereas Dana Hanks has served as director of the Blaine Senior Center for 8 years, and whereas the community has benefited greatly from the dedication and invaluable contribution made by Dana Hanks, and whereas under the leadership of Dana Hanks, the Blaine Senior Program has grown to nearly 700 members and 100 volunteers. And whereas Dana Hanks served on the planning committee for the Blaine Pavilion, working alongside the Boys and Girls Club, helping to see the project through completion. And whereas Dana Hanks has set a high standard of expectations for the Senior Center while creating a safe and welcoming environment. And whereas Dana Hanks has been an invaluable asset to this community. And now, therefore, I, Mayor Harry Robinson, and the City Council of the City of Blaine, Washington, on behalf of the entire community, express our sincere gratitude and proclaim August the 8th, 2016, as a day to recognize Dana Hanks.
I would like to say some remarks,
well,
Harry. Thank you.
Here.
Okay. Sounds great.
Okay. Is that on?
I think so.
Okay.
Well, I had such a wonderful party that I couldn't say any of the words that I wanted to say. Which were mainly, I am so honored to have worked for the city in partnership with the city for the Blaine Senior Center. The council has been wonderful. The city managers that I've worked with have been so supportive. All of the staff have always been there for us, and the board of the Senior Center, the volunteers of the Senior Center, and the members. It's a wonderful combination, and it's just been an honor to kind of drive the car or steer the ship. But without everybody behind us, it wouldn't be the wonderful place that it is, and it is truly a wonderful place, and I wouldn't have left unless I would have hit 62 in retirement age, because it's in my heart and will be in my heart forever. And it was a very difficult job to leave because I I loved it very much, and I will continue to love it. I even called to volunteer today, so I'm going to be around, and thank you so much for this wonderful honor. It's really just very touching, and I'm overwhelmed with appreciation for this opportunity that I've had to work with all of you. So thank you.
Okay, next item on the agenda is written communications. And do we have any?
We received an email dated July 28th from Worthington, Michigan, regarding the recent Spokane County measure. But we're having such a big issue with the shipments of oil and coal by rail to the city.
I don't know.
And the email dated July 29th.
I think it was looking for pushed. Okay, so the next item on the agenda is our consent agenda, approval of bills in the amount of $179,583.64, approval of payroll in the amount of $536,636.16, and approval of the council minutes for July the 25th, 2016.
So moved.
Second.
Question?
On the minutes for July 25th, under audience participation, Renato, when I listened to what she had to say, was concerned that there was only really one exit out of the area over on Dodd Street. And I think the minutes should somehow speak to that so that somebody looking back at it will understand that was what I understood her to be her primary concern when this all started in the discussion.
Any other questions, comments? Dennis has pointed to very appropriate, maybe we should mention that. There is concern that if a train is stopped on that crossing, there is no other way out of there. And so maybe that should be, maybe we could listen to the comments Nada made and then come up with some wording.
Okay, I can add that. I can listen back and add that. I know it's a little more general.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, so we're going to have approval of bills, payroll, and the approval of the council minutes revised. And we have a motion on the table. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion is carried 6-0. Next item on the agenda is council action items, resolution 1690-16, extension of the expiration timeline for the Bridges PUD. Mr. Jones, are you going to undertake that one?
Yes, I am. Thank you. This is a pretty straightforward item. It is an extension, as it says, of a previously approved project. The interesting sort of nuance here is that according to city law, preliminary plats are valid for 5 years with an option for 2 one-year extensions, and PUDs are also, well, actually PUDs now are tied to the plat timeline because we changed our code to make it so these don't move forward as two separate things, but they actually move forward together. But that doesn't automatically apply retroactively. So PUDs, when this was approved, had 5 years plus 2 one-year extension options. Since this project was approved, the state automatically extended all plats in this timeline for 7 years. So now the plat is valid, but the plat can't be built without the PUD approval because it would not comply with our development standards. It wouldn't have all the special exceptions that are allowed through the PUD process. So this is a request by the applicant to extend the planned unit development approval one additional year, and then they would be able to continue to pursue the development and sale of the property and such. They would have to come forward to build the infrastructure within that timeline, or at least submit a development application to develop the infrastructure in that timeline and move forward. So they don't have a lot of time left, but this would give them one additional year.
The staff recommends that the council approve resolution 1690-16, granting the second one-year extension to the expiration timeline for the Bridges plat and planned unit development project. There are some other options, which means that we could delay the extension or take no action. So, if anyone would care to make a motion?
Could I ask a question first?
Certainly.
Michael, the letter from Ford talks about the sewer service being put in place through Lincoln Park. Are we bound some way if that doesn't go through to provide extension again, or is it separate?
No, we're not. They're not really tied together. The city's plan to extend sewer through Lincoln Park to make development possible in East Blaine is not tied to this directly. Mr. Ford would be responsible for doing that if we didn't build the extension, just as Mr. Conley and his partners and the Grandis Pond folks would be responsible for extending if the city doesn't do that piece. So this is a step in that direction, but they're not tied to each other.
But as far as you know, that is in the works this coming year to go out to bids on sewer?
Yeah, Raven would be a better person to answer that question than I, but my understanding of the status on that project is that she plans to have it go out to bid later in the year with construction happening probably in the spring. The reason for that, as I understand it, is that the bidding climate right now is very unfavorable, and cities, other jurisdictions are actually having projects that people aren't bidding on, and also are coming in at very, very high on bids, and she would like to avoid that by trying to do it in somewhat the off-season, so to speak. Planning in the fall for a project early in the year would be better than trying to do it now, is her assessment. That's how I understand it.
Thanks.
Any further questions? Yes, Paul.
Michael, when the state extended the approval of the preliminary plats to 7 years, did they also address the issue of subsequent extensions?
Yes and no. It's not entirely clear. And we are, in fact, in discussions with an attorney who represents a different project, not this one, in regards to interpreting our code. It may be that because our code allows for 2 1-year extensions, it's possible that they can be added on to the 7 years to make it an 8th and a 9th year under the combination of state and city law. It's become very complicated. The state changed the platting laws 4 times, I believe, during the recession, with different timelines and different groups of timelines of application, so it, different projects have different timelines and expire in different numbers of years. So we're exploring that. This may not be the last time that we come before you for this project.
Understood. That's exactly what I was asking.
Yes.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Any discussion? Okay.
I make a motion we approve the 1-year extension.
Second.
Further questions or comments? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion is carried 6-0. Next item on the council action items is ordinance 16-2887 and ZTA-2-16, the accessory dwelling units within the residential low-density zoning district.
Mr. Mayor, Maddie is going to present on that. This is an item that we had her bring forward through the Planning Commission, so she'll follow up with that on you tonight.
Thank you, Maddie.
My name is Maddie Ollie, and I'm presenting Zoning Text Amendment 2-16 tonight, which is a proposal to allow accessory dwelling units in the residential low-density zoning district. So based on comments from the public, City Council passed Resolution 1673-15, which initiated a zoning text amendment to consider whether accessory dwelling units should be allowed in the residential low-density zoning district. So the proposed zoning text amendment tonight in ordinance number 16-2887 would amend the residential low density zoning chapter, BMC 17.34, to allow attached and detached accessory dwelling units within the residential low density zoning district as a conditional use. And this is different compared to the other three single family zones that currently allow for ADUs as an outright permitted use. So under this proposal, each application for an accessory dwelling unit in this zone would be subject to the conditional use process, which is a public hearing through the Planning Commission. So on June 23rd, 2016, the Planning Commission recommended approval of this zoning text amendment to allow accessory dwelling units, or ADUs, as a conditional use in this zone. And at that meeting, about 20 community members attended, and they were all from one sub-area, the Montford Park area, attended this meeting, and the comments for and against were evenly mixed in regards to the proposal. So I wanted to go over what an accessory dwelling unit is for those who might not know. So an accessory dwelling unit, or an ADU, is an additional, complete, separate living space that is secondary to a single-family home but located on the same property. So they can either be attached or detached to the home, and they're often called mother-in-law suites, granny flats, and cottages. And so complete means that the accessory dwelling unit must provide its own living, sleeping, bathroom, and kitchen facilities that are all separate from the main residence that they do not share. So, like I said, there's attached and detached. Attached means that the ADU is attached to the home, and it's commonly the conversion of an attic space or a garage, or an attached garage or a basement into an accessory dwelling unit. Then there's also detached, which could be like the construction of a cottage, like in the photo to the right. One purpose for accessory dwelling units is to create a secondary living space on the property that family members can use while retaining their independence, so commonly used for aging parents or family members with disabilities or adult children. But another purpose is that they can be rented out. And the City of Blaine currently has a regulation that in order to have an accessory dwelling unit, the property owner of record needs to live in either the main home or the accessory dwelling unit, so they can't both be rented out at the same time. So this is a map that we created, and it shows where accessory dwelling units are currently allowed. They're outright allowed in the single family one, single family two, and planned residential zones, which is the green area on these maps. And if passed, they'd be allowed in the pink areas on this map, which is the residential low-density zoning district, which are in like four discrete geographical areas. The purpose of the residential low-density zoning district is to maintain and create an environment which meets the needs of single-family residents while restricting uses within the district and establishing a minimum lot size and maximum density. So the minimum lot size in this zone is 7,200 square feet, which is the largest residential lot sizes within the City of Blaine right now. And accessory dwelling units were originally approved by City Council in 2005 for the areas in green, and at the time they approved development regulations which would be applied to accessory dwelling units in the residential low-density zoning district. So there are regulations that are in place now that would be applied if allowed within this new zone. In the past 5 years, staff has seen maybe a handful of accessory dwelling units built within these three zones. And this is in part might be due to the recession, but also might be due to the strict regulations and cost of building an accessory dwelling unit, which can be substantial. And if such, staff is not expecting to see an exponential increase in the amount of ADUs that would be built in the residential low-density zoning district if this was passed. And during the public hearing at the Planning Commission, it was brought up that some areas within this zone have homeowners associations, which have their own private CCNRs, or conditions, covenants, and restrictions. And this is one of the reasons why the Planning Commission recommended ADUs be allowed as a conditional use that goes through that extra process through the public hearing, so that they could see if CCNRs do apply for a proposal that wanted an accessory dwelling unit. But the city doesn't enforce these CCNRs because they're private development agreements that we're not party to. One of the main reasons why accessory dwelling units were approved 5 years ago was to promote density in developed areas, enhance the city's ability to accommodate population growth, and encourage a diversified housing stock that will enhance city choices for housing choices for residents. And this is a reflection of Goal 1 and Goal 7 of the housing element of the Blaine Comprehensive Plan, and staff believes these goals still apply to this proposal. In conclusion, staff believes the proposed zoning text amendment complies with the goals of the Blaine Comprehensive Plan, the goals of the zoning district, and will not create a significant negative impact within the zone because of the existing regulations in place already and the significant investment of time and money needed to invest or build an ADU, which will limit the number created. And I can answer any questions that you have now.
Question? Yeah. How many of these zones have CCNRs?
We know that the residential low-density zoning district does have a few neighborhoods that have their own homeowners associations, but we don't know the exact number of HOAs that are in this zone.
So are you saying that, what are there, three areas within the city that are, could you go back to that map?
Sure.
There's actually four.
Yeah, so they're all in their own, like, discrete geographical area, but they all have the same development regulations. So within
but they
these
don't
four areas.
All have CCNRs.
No, they don't.
So that if you had a portion of one, and I think it's Montford that has it, is that right?
Yes, it's the lower pink area on the map.
That there would be some areas in there where, if this passes, the ADUs would be allowed if they went through the correct process as far as getting them.
So they'd be allowed by our city zoning code, but they're still not allowed by their private development agreement. So that's up to their own homeowners association to enforce, because that's the point of like their HOA. But they're still not allowed in that area, and homeowners associations agreements can be more restrictive because they are private agreements that homeowners sign and agree to before they build or move in.
So what I'm getting at is that you could have a portion of that area where they would be in, and there would be other areas where they would be blocked out.
That's correct, yeah. That area is not all HOA governed. There's some that don't have an HOA.
Charlie, so do our rules supersede the CCRs?
You want to speak?
No, they're separate rules. And so the CCNRs, as an example, let's take design. The city in the residential low-density zoning district doesn't really have design requirements. A house, other than some of the basics like setbacks and height, a house can have any roof pitch. It can be designed in whatever manner the person decides. And in the Montford Park neighborhood, you have some very traditional older style homes. You have some newer interpretations of Northwest. And then you have some that are fairly modern in style or contemporary in style. The CCNRs might require in a certain neighborhood that everything looks sort of like a traditional farmhouse. The fact that we don't have those rules doesn't change the CCNRs, and the fact that the CCNRs are in place don't change our rules, but a person has to comply with both.
Yes.
Two questions, if I may. If I understand the two of you correctly, the CCNRs would prevail if they are more restrictive, so that if the CCNRs prohibited ancillary units, they would, the builder could not refer to our code and say, but the city lets me do it, so I can't do it. Is that correct?
All except what the builder could say. The builder could say anything they want to say, but okay. But your analysis is correct, yes, sir.
Okay, then would it make sense to put a sentence into this code amendment saying that please recall that the CCNRs, if any, also apply?
I would rather not do that because that leads us into the enforcement of CCNRs, of which we are not a party to. It implies that we will be enforcing them. The reason that the Planning Commission is suggesting conditional use is so that that information can be brought forward, and then the Planning Commission could say that would be, for example, it would be not harmonious with the neighborhood because it clearly violates their CCNRs, or it would be inconsistent with some of the neighborhood patterns because it violates their CCNRs. So there'd be an opportunity to deny a city permit with that as some of the substance behind it, rather than saying more directly that we might be enforcing them.
Second question, if I may. You said that this is a conditional use. Would you review for me really quickly what the criteria are for conditional use?
Yes, I can do that. Just a moment.
The reason I ask is that from my own Planning Commission days, I recall that many of the criteria were highly subjective, and I'm trying to slowly move us out of subjective criteria in favor of more objective criteria.
I agree with you that some of these are quite subjective, and it would be beneficial when time allows to probably change some of them. The findings that the Planning Commission needs to make in order to grant a conditional use permit is that the project will be harmonious in accordance with the general and specific objectives of the city's comprehensive plan and zoning, that the project will be designed, constructed, and operated and maintained so as to be harmonious and appropriate in appearance with the existing or intended character of the general vicinity. It will not be hazardous or disturbing to existing or future neighboring uses. It will be serviced adequately by essential public facilities, and then it goes on to talk about various utilities and things. It will not create additional excessive requirements at public cost for public facilities and services, and it will not be detrimental to the economic welfare of the community. It will not involve uses, activities, processes, materials, equipment, and conditions, and it goes on to talk about creation of noise, traffic, smoke, fumes, glare, odors, things that wouldn't really relate to an accessory dwelling unit. And it talks about vehicle access as well, and then it would talk also as well about it will not result in the destruction, loss, or damage to any natural, scenic, or historic feature of major importance. And some of those things, in particular, harmonious or
exactly.
Adversely affect. And even the last one, talking about scenic or historic feature of major importance, it's debatable what is of major importance, and so they are criteria that are sometimes difficult.
Yeah, I'm not going to stick a spoke in the wheels of progress tonight, but I would ask you to keep at the Planning Commission such that when time permits, we do try to make these things a tad bit more objective.
We can work on that.
Thank you.
Maddie, could you sort of briefly summarize what the comments from the citizens were for or against? In other words, more emphasis on what the against comments were.
Right. A lot of the concerns were about specific regulations and developments of the accessory dwelling units. So there's a concern about where they would park. And so there's a concern about off-street parking and more traffic be a safety hazard. But we have an existing regulation that says accessory dwelling units need to provide a off-street parking space. So a lot of the concerns that were brought up were already addressed. They are addressed in our existing regulations, like there's height restrictions, there's setback restrictions. If you can access off an alley, you need to do that. There's a concern about development and wetlands, but we have regulations against that already. And there's concern about noise, but that would be enforced through like our nuisance ordinance, and we believe that accessory dwelling units, they're typically pretty small, under 1,000 square feet. You can't get too many people in there, so that wasn't a huge concern for staff, and that's something that would be addressed in our enforcement. So it was mostly concerns about the way that they would be developed and creating a negative impact on neighbors. But.
I just had a quick question. On the areas that would be affected, what percentage of the total square footage of lot can be covered with driveways, houses, things like that? Is there a rule of thumb? In other words, they can't have 100% coverage, I would think.
No, and that's not typical for any residential zoned area. Typically, you can you have a 40% open space requirement, so you can build up to 60% with impervious surfaces, and that would apply to accessory dwelling units for the whole lot.
And Addie, you, on table 1734-40, under accessory structures, it talks about the structure setbacks.
Right.
And they're only 4 feet on the side of the lot.
Yeah, so those are taken from our existing regulations for accessory dwelling units. Like I said, they're already allowed in the single-family one, single-family two, and planned residential zones. So, they were approved with those regulations for that 4 foot side yard setback and the 8 yard rear yard setback.
And those accessory structure setbacks apply to garages and sheds, so they're the same setbacks that were in place at that time when accessory dwelling units were permitted. They the city determined at that point that those were appropriate for a cottage as well.
Right, and single family homes only have an 8 foot side yard setback, so in comparison, it's not that much smaller. And the ADU is typically much smaller than a single-family home.
Makes a lot of difference, though, on the neighbor if you have a new structure that is 4 feet from his yard rather than 8. I remember those arguments.
I guess that's the argument. Back at these regulations.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other questions or comments?
Well, staff recommends the council accept the Planning Commission recommendation and approve Ordinance 16-2887, amending Chapter 17.34 RL residentially low density zoning district to allow accessory dwelling units as a conditional use. Also to waive the second reading.
So moved.
Second.
Motion has been made and seconded. Are there any further questions or comments? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Motion
is okay, the motion is carried 5-1. Dennis being the nay. Okay. That now brings us to Commission Committee and Board Reports. The Blaine Economic Development Advisory Committee.
We have a meeting, a joint meeting with the City Council next Monday, a study session they're invited to attend.
Okay, super. Blaine Tourism and Advisory Committee, Mr. Lorenzen.
We have a meeting tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. to look over the grant applications.
Okay. WTA Board, Paul.
Thursday at 8 o'clock at the WTA headquarters will be the executive board meeting. Primary topic will be proposed service changes. There will also be a meeting to the same purpose the following Thursday at the courthouse, county courthouse. All are welcome to attend.
Drayton Harbor Shellfish Advisory Committee, Mr. Hawkins.
nothing for the shellfish, but I attended the Islamic neighborhood picnic a couple weeks ago. That was really outstanding. Weather was great, and there's a lot of people from around the neighborhood, and it's just lots of fun. And anyway, they did a really nice job introducing themselves to the community again this year, and their young Hyman was really good. And so anyway, they just did a good job, and everybody seemed to have a good time when I talked to them. So.
Thank you. Okay. Dennis, how about Library Senior Center and Boys and Girls Club?
The library has got the library surveys, and they have the postcard. I guess a question came up about why does it only, on the postcard, why is the library the only item that's listed rather than the tourists and the visitors surveys as well? And I talked to Dave a little bit about, we have a post office box in town, and we never received these cards. And I don't know whether that means the all of the people that are in the post office boxes did not get cards or not.
Can you answer that?
So we went through AMS, the printing company down, or yeah, down there, on Broadway Street, they're on. However, when we purchased it, they're supposed to send it to every single residential address as well as PO boxes. So I'm not 100% certain why they weren't received through your PO box, but
I have a sneaking suspicion that there's a lot of PO boxes that are not, they're Canadian resident.
Sorry, what was that?
The, a lot of the post office boxes are used by Canadian customers. And okay. I don't know whether that, how, why it should have affected it, but we never got them. I talked to some other people that had them.
Yeah, there were eight routes that were advised as far as mailing. And so what we need to do is probably go back and check with Tom Beckwith as to how he would like any of the post offices mailed, because you are correct. There are a lot of non-residents that use the post office in Blaine.
So can't you tell by your billing from utilities and stuff like that, for a post office box where they go? I mean, you should be able to divide that out of your computer, you think.
So we'll need to do some homework on that. The reason why there's a separation on the mailer was that there are three surveys, and we didn't want to confuse the people using the surveys to go to one or the other. They're in the post office they're in the library for the library survey, and the residents were notified of those two, the resident as well as the library. Then there's also a visitor survey, which is available at the VIC and Simeon and other kinds of places like that. So we'll follow up with the post office. I did speak to Council Member Olison about that, and we have a meeting with Beckwith later this week, so I'll follow up on that.
My wife was having issues trying to figure out to get onto it from the website. It was on the card that was sent out. Mine on the phone went good, and I was taking it two different times, and I hit the button or hand down a little bit low, and it just eliminates all my answers. So I'd have to go through it about four times for me to get through it.
So you said you have problems with yours? Okay, I'll talk about that.
Well, I mean, I'm just saying that's what happened to me. I mean, I was doing it on my phone, and my hand would slide down, and the next thing I know, I'd have to go back and start over and go right to the very beginning. You can't go back and start. That could be operator error too, probably.
I've had that problem various
times. Is there a chance that all of these surveys could be copies of them, at least hard copies?
Sure,
could
absolutely.
Be placed.
Mm-hmm.
senior center, there's an awful lot of people that travel through there every day.
Absolutely.
And if they could be put up there, I'd make sure they got back.
Yeah, thank you for the comment. Yeah. And anyplace else, too. By the way, if someone does fill them out, they can just drop them up at City Hall, or we can have them mailed. But he wants all those mailed so we can certify and maintain a count of them. So we'll follow up on both of those.
And is there a time frame that this is going to be completed?
Well, he's wanting as much as possible. There's two meetings, at least two. One's going to happen next Monday. We're going to get a preliminary report. Then there'll be another meeting which will, I think, be in about 60, 70 days. Then there's one more survey after that, which all of the work that goes into the first two start to funnel into some key recommendations.
So we're toward the end of the year?
More toward the end of the year.
Okay. Because there was a question of, it seemed like a tough time to be getting surveys from people during the summer.
Right. I think they've got over 250 submitted already.
Dennis, how about the Senior Center and the Boys and Girls Club?
Senior Center, there's a hold on the selection of the person for Dana's job right now. And they'll be looking at that this week again. Sorry to say that. Library Committee, no report. They're going to meet the third Wednesday. And the Boys and Girls Club, I see Chris has got kids in there every day during the week. So it's going.
And Cemetery Board, Mr. Jones.
Park and Cemetery Board meets on Thursday morning this week. They have a busy agenda, and it's a busy time of year for parks. We'll probably have a full update for you on some projects like the skate park and some other things at the next council meeting. Sort of unrelated, because it's not really a Park and Cemetery Board item, but I wanted to mention that Splash Days occurred on Friday this past week, and it will be again this Friday, the 12th. And there were about 150 so kids the time when I went by. So it was pretty good turnout. Wasn't quite as warm as some of the days we had last year. And, of course, warm weather makes it much more successful. But it was good.
Next Friday.
Yeah, it's supposed to be warm.
Yep.
They were having a good time.
Small Cities Caucus, we've got a meeting next week, I believe.
Yes.
And Washington Council of Governments, no report. And Chief Hollander is not here. That brings us to department reports, public works.
I may, if I can find it, have a report for her.
Oh, good.
Well, it's on my paper here.
There was some fellow named Dave Wilbrick was at that meeting, I believe.
So we're going to talk about the overpass? Why isn't it open?
So I'll try to pitch it here a little bit for Raven. There was a Public Works Advisory Committee last week. They were talking about some revenue alternatives relative to power rates. And she mentioned it was a pretty good discussion. I presented some information on the strategic planning. It was supposed to be about a half-hour presentation, but for about an hour and 15 minutes, so lots of interest in that conversation. Mitchell Avenue, the guardrail installation occurs this Wednesday. The bridge will open immediately after that. The path won't be open until the week before school starts. That's because there's a handrail need that needs to be installed. There was a wildfire in the county. Your CMEO, you may have seen that at the hillside. Looks like there was about 20 acres burned. It was a pretty substantial, but no issues, no other damage that she's reporting. The road AO is coming up. I've got some flyers, which I'll give to you in a little bit. That's where public works equipment is shown off to the community, and people can come and take a look at it. Chip seal is occurring by two companies on the Small Worst Rocks roster, including Vista Terrace, in case someone asks about that. Well, 8.1 is doing very well at 400 gallons per minute. It's keeping up with the demand, but if you recall, last year we had some problems with that well, so hopefully this year holds the rest of the summer. The Delia crosswalk on Mitchell, traffic count does not warrant that. I think there was a question earlier about whether we should have one or not. The visibility is good. So they're indicating now that there's no need for a sidewalk. Now that's, I think, controversial by some or council members. So, then, so we can have that back again.
Different though, you do it now when there's
no school.
800 cars going down there every day and right. buses every day.
Yeah, or we can, so I, we'll bring that back to you. I think we need to follow up.
Maybe they can just slide those forms down there, down to the daily and paint.
Okay. The next is a big thank you. Apparently, Mary Lou raised her hand to do the American Public Works Association and set your own travel agenda. So thank you for that. You may know that Raven's not here tonight because she has a broken foot. And so she's on crutches and in the healing mode. So she's kind of crossed her fingers about that trip. It's a metatarsal on her left foot, which is fractured enough. She's wearing a boot and been pretty lamed up for almost over a week now, I think. So we're going to follow that pretty closely. Yes, sir.
Oh, I'll wait to hear that.
So that's the end of my report.
Oh. Okay. So on that walkway off of Mitchell Street, I was looking at that the other day and thinking, now that is just a great place to paint stuff on. So, I mean, do they have any kind of a sealer? They can paint on that thing, maybe like a resin or something like that, that could make it easier to...
So you're thinking it's going to get graffitied
yeah,
up?
Yeah, and the other thing is the school is interested in doing a lot like what Meridian did in their school, and they have the students are putting murals on the walls and all this stuff during the school, and I was wondering if they could, if there'd be any interest in putting a mural on that by the students at Blaine, but anything, whatever they need, do they need to put some kind of a sealer on that? Because it's yeah. going to be, it's a, that's a target. I mean,
that's a good suggestion.
Done, it needs to be done before school starts, too.
You know, the city so far, at least to my observation, has been fairly free of graffiti. You know, there's other places, which, except for the trains that pass through. But I'll put that, we'll find out about that sealer. That's
had,
a great idea.
Had groups go through, kids that are going through the schools at various times and tagging in the school and stuff. So. But, I mean, it seems like to me it would be proactive to have some kind of a finish on that wall that would make it easier to
clean up,
paint
over. Yeah,
if it's possible.
Mr. Hawkins, I can tell that Sherry's beside herself waiting to ask you to speak into your microphone and maybe bend it up closer to your face.
Okay. There's that better.
That's much better. Thank
Actually,
you.
Yes, thank you.
So, that's the end of Raven's report.
Community Development Services.
Our report this evening is on enforcement. It's a mid-year enforcement report, and Maddie is going to get that for you.
Okay,
so this is our six-month report since we started our big enforcement efforts. And this is just our current cases right now. So over the last 6 months, the number of enforcement cases have significantly reduced over time, and despite new cases being added over that time. So right now, we have 26 confirmed properties with violations. There are 16 with building violations, 2 with trash, 6 with vegetation, and 2 without a permit. And the most prevalent right now being dangerous structures, since those cases tend to take more time since they have more than one violation, and addressing the building takes a significant amount of time. So the most common violations associated with dangerous structures include overgrown vegetation, trash and debris, the structure being unsecured, graffiti, and then the structure itself. So it's a lot to address, and so those that's why the number stays pretty high. And we don't close them out until they're 100% done. So that's why they're staying that way instead of us closing it out. But most of the properties have made significant progress towards resolution. So the city has sent 13 letters to the 16 of the properties with buildings of concern. Three of these properties have buildings that are of non-priority because they're properly secured, they're kept in good condition, and they don't maintain a life safety hazard. So we're trying to focus on the ones that are posing more of a threat to the public safety. So of those 13 properties, all 13 have received letters, and all of them have responded to the city, and they're all working towards some form of resolution. So each property has their own form of resolution since it's a case-by-case basis, but it doesn't always mean they have to be demolished, but some are wanting to repair, so that takes more time as well. The city has also issued 5 notices of civil violations, 2 of which have been heard by the hearing examiner, and they've been given timelines for resolutions, and they've been given assessed fines as well. The city has also issued 1 stop work order for illegal land clearing, and the 3 other notices of civil violations will be heard on August 19th together. And I can answer questions about individual properties at the end, but I have more to present. So it's just one of the properties that we've been dealing with. But I'd like to speak about a few prominent cases that we're currently working on. So the first is the derelict structure known as the Casa Azul building at 665 Peace Portal Drive. And this is what the photo is of the back of the property. The property owner is actually working actively with the city to take steps to resolve the violations there. But we've run into a roadblock because 665 Peace Portal Drive is 1 unit of a larger 3-unit building. So they actually are attached. And the city's goal is to have the property owner either repair or remove the structure. And the property owner submitted an engineering report with preliminary findings, one of those being that the unit is attached to the other structure. And so in order to address it being removed or repaired, an engineering report needs to be done for the whole structure in order to enable that so we don't endanger other buildings. So we're in the middle of getting the permission of the 2 other property owners to access their property in order to make that assessment. But in the meantime, this is the after photo. He's taking care of all that trash and vegetation, which makes us really happy. So he is working towards getting it addressed. And the other case that I wanted to address is we call it Country Enterprises. That's the company who owns these 3 properties that have violations. The governing party is Mr. William Doby. But the 3 properties, their addresses are 481 C Street, 2480 Bell Road, and the Rocky Mountain Trading Post property, which is actually a few different parcels. And so staff did meet with Mr. Doby at the end of June, where we made a timeline to address all 3 properties by August 1st, but he has failed to take steps forward with that. And so hasn't been addressed yet, but we have a hearing for all 3 properties on August 19th with the hearing examiner, and a default judgment will be made on his behalf because he did not respond or appeal within the 15-day time period. And so that will be addressed in the city. After the hearing examiner makes a judgment for him, can enable us to abate the violations at the cost of the property owner. So we'll see what happens. But I thought we'd go over some before and after, because that's the best part for me. So this is the property on C Street, which was before, and some of the violations were overgrown vegetation, there's a dangerous fence, there was debris, and then this is the after, and so they actually cleaned all of it up. And then this is the other side, the before, and like you see, there's more stuff. And then this is the after, so it's looking better. This is just an example of overgrown vegetation. It's our most prevalent enforcement type because there's grass everywhere. So it's before and after. And another thing that the city's been trying to address is sheds that have been gone over time, unmaintained. It happens. But this is one on Harrison Avenue that's actually at the rear of the property near the alleyway, and which has been... It's kind of a bad photo, but it's been taken down, is the point. It's not there anymore. This is one on F Street that's abutting an alley that has a junk vehicle and trash and a pile of old vegetation, which is now gone. So Over the 6 months, we've resolved 65 total enforcement cases, 24 of those being vegetation, which is the most prevalent, 19 trash and debris, 8 dangerous structures, 4 sheds, 2 fences, and 2 abandoned residences, which have been demolished. And we actually got a demolition permit application in today for the home on D Street that was I think it was arson, so that's going to be demolished in the near future here. 9 parking, 3 environmental, and 2 without work without a permit. So the original cases presented on March 14th and 22nd, with the exception of the 6 buildings, have all been closed. And that's it. Are there any questions about individual properties?
Steve. One question and then one thing I just, when you were looking at the pictures, you had. On Bill Dobie, has he been given notice on the Mitchell Street property as far as their overgrown vegetation?
I don't think so, but that's definitely...
Okay, that's right on the east side of Mitchell as you drop down the hill. Years ago, the city had him take an 8-plex down there. And then the other one, which just reminded me, on F Street with the overgrown vegetation, I think it's 550 F Street, There is a major water leak there. The backyard is flooded. I was there yesterday. I forgot to call the city today. Let them know if somebody could pass that on.
550 F Street.
Yes, one is the picture that had the overgrown vegetation in the
really?
Backyard. I think it's 550. No.
Okay.
I'll report that.
Yeah. Anything else?
Work without permit. She'll have to get a permit if she wants to. That's what I think so.
Oh, okay. Perfect. So what are the two?
It said on the work without a permit, one was non-responsive. What do we do in a case where we've got people obviously doing work without a permit and they don't respond? What do we do? Want to arrest them?
Like all the other cases, we give them an informal letter first if it's not severe, like unlike the land clearing one. So we'll tell them you need to stop, you need to apply for a certain permit if that's the case, and if they fail to do so within the time period we give, then we have to do the notice of civil violation, which is that formal enforcement action that we take. So those two were minor. So like I said, we have one stop work order out right now that's still active. We're waiting for a land disturbance permit to be submitted to us before we take that down.
Usually work without a permit is something like a deck that wasn't there on Friday but was there when you came to work on Monday. Yeah. And so it's not an ongoing construction project.
Yeah.
And so it's a little different. There could be instances where we would actually issue a stop work order, but that's rare. It's usually a stop in and chat with them. But most of the time for those kinds of projects, it's already done. Where one of them we're working on was indoors, where someone added some plumbing that we didn't know about until the homeowners association in the condominium complex told us about it. So it's one of those things we would never even have known.
Matty, on Bell Road, I think it's Bell Road, where all the trailers are still being parked.
Right, that's that Rocky Mountain Trading Post site, and so that's one of the violations that's
they
in.
They seem to be growing. That's something that bothered me.
Right,
you know,
and
said he was going to do something, and then all of a sudden I looked around and he added a bunch more.
Yeah, and so what Mr. Dobie told us was that he is not benefiting from that truck parking, that it's the adjacent truck parking company that's on the backside that is directing their clients to park there, but it's up to the private property owner to have those towed. We've consulted with the police department, who said that they'd be more than happy to come out and be a peace presence for us if we want to go out and do that. If the place ecology blocks in order to block the property from being accessed, but it's up to the private property owner to do that, and since he's failing to clean up any of his other properties, we're just going to address that at the hearing examiner.
Further questions? Thank you, Matty.
Thanks.
Okay. Public safety. Chief Haslam.
It's broke my autopilot there.
Before you start, I want to thank you for your emails and giving us up-to-date reports. And I think it's,
you're welcome, sir. I appreciate
good.
That.
I appreciate it.
Actually, my only report tonight is follow-up to a question that a couple of you folks had asked at our last meeting in regards to crime rate in Blaine as opposed to other communities in Whatcom County. And I will forward you a summary that shows graph information, but the average in 2015 for crimes per thousand in the smaller cities outside of Bellingham, but in cities in Whatcom County was 32.7 crimes per thousand. And so far, 2015 for Blaine, we were at 86 crimes per thousand. So if you want to look at it on the downside, we're 250% above average. If you want to look at it on the good side, we were 13% lower than Bellingham, which had 97 crimes per thousand. So we have the second highest rate of crimes per thousand in Whatcom County in 2015. And in 2014, just by way of comparison, we had 65.6 crimes per thousand, and the average in the other communities in Whatcom County was 40. We are the only community which had an increase in crimes per thousand in 2015 in Whatcom County. Every other community in Whatcom County had a decrease.
Does back over a border town have any?
Probably a variety of factors, Your Honor. And I can't remember which of the council had asked about Snohomish County, for example. Snohomish County submits its data on a different type of reporting system that we use. And I'm going to have to run a comparison, a translation to make sure we're comparing apples to apples. But our crime rates are appear to be higher than communities in Snohomish County, which I think is the reverse of what I told you off the cuff the other night. My sense was the further south you go, the worse it got. That's not. And any other questions I can ask you or respond for you tonight? I don't have any other information.
The only one I had was, have we been able to apprehend the people who have been involved in burglaries around town?
No, sir. The upside is we've not had another significant burglary yet. And the downside is we Blaine PD, have not caught the people responsible for Blaine's burglary. Any others?
Thank you,
Chief. Thank you, sir.
Okay. Administrative.
No
Service.
Report.
No report. Mr. City Manager.
Just to report that I'm going to be out of the office the 16th through the 29th, and that next Monday, again, is a special meeting with the council study session on the Beckwith. We'll send out notices and agendas for that.
Okay. Any changes to any of the calendars at all? Okay. Any unfinished business? Any new business? Hearing none, I will adjourn the meeting at 7:04.
Not quite enough.